But God is merciful, and we from this side are anxiously working to infuse new spiritual life into the world without the necessity of such a disaster. In early, primitive days, the astral plane or hell held almost all who passed over for a long time, but this seems unjust, for they knew no better, I said. It was not unjust, it was simply a great natural law. Those whose whole lives were devoted to fighting and cruelty would naturally go on acting in the same way for a long time after death. It would only be after a long period spent on this side that they would begin to desire a different kind of life. All those who resisted the temptation to obsess would probably remain on the astral plane till they had developed sufficiently to pass upward to the spiritual plane. At the same time, the tendency to obsess among primitive people is very strong, and therefore many fall to hell. Is it the whole course of our life that fixes the particular division of hell into which we finally fall, or is it the type of obsession which we practice? Many old men pass almost at once to hell. They have outworn their astral bodies almost as much as they have their physical bodies. These will sink down to the division corresponding with that type of sin which has predominated in their lives, hate, lust, and so forth. But those who pass over in early or middle life have not yet worn out their astral bodies, nor completely developed their character. Their division is that which corresponds with the type of obsession which they have practiced. That is the worst type of obsession. I interrupted, I understand. In my own case I obsessed for drink, lust, and finally for revenge. The latter, being a more spiritual sin, dragged me down deeper than would the other two types of obsession. My rescuer continued, at the same time, the type of life a man has lived very largely decides the type of obsession which is likely to tempt him most. A lustful man, if he falls into obsessing, will probably do it for the purpose of satisfying his lust, and so will fall ultimately into the division in which lust predominates. But see, here is the mission center or rest house. As he spoke I saw a building plainly yet strongly built. The door was small, and windows there were none save at the top above the door. From this came the light we had steered by so far. My rescuer hammered at the door, and, as it opened, a flood of light poured out which blinded me for the time. My rescuer seemed to drag me forward, but I could see nothing, only I heard the door crashed behind me. Now, added the officer, I think it's time you returned. JW Chapter 27, he has to return to Corinth and rescue another soul. Transvision of J.W. June 29, 1914. Again I passed through the air from this plane of existence to that of the spirit plane. I found H. J. L. and the officer awaiting me in the room, and almost at once the latter resumed his narrative. I have no very clear idea of what took place in that temporary rest house. The light was so intense that I was practically blind while there, but at the same time I gained some rest. A feeling of peace and hope seemed to fill that building, utterly unlike the atmosphere in any of the ordinary buildings in hell. To me a man used to speak words of comfort and hope, and my spirit seemed to grow more quiet. Day after day I used to hear singing, real singing, sweet and beautiful, oh! How different from the horrible discord I had heretofore heard in hell designated by the name of singing. At length the messenger who had brought me to the house said, now you must go back strengthened by your rest here to the fourth division. Once there you must get some companion to come with you. When you have done this, return to this rest house with him, and here you will meet one whom you drove from your side long years ago. So back I went to that city. I must admit the darkness came as a relief after the great light, but otherwise I came back feeling more disgusted than ever with life in hell. Once back in the city I set to work to find someone who would come with me, but it was no easy task. At length, however, I got into conversation with a woman, whom I soon realized was sick of this sort of life. Why don't you try and get out of this place? I asked her, I can see you are sick of it. There's nothing here which brings any real pleasure. It's all an empty show, shadows, just shadows. We gain nothing here by vice. Why not try and get into better surroundings? I'm going to try, so come along with me, it will be less lonely if we go together. What's the use? She replied. You know we are in hell, where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. The fire mayn't be quenched, but we can get out of it. How can we? We are damned eternally. When I was alive I did not believe in a future life, much less the hell, so I said, a short life and a merry one. I find now I was wrong, I wished I had now I had been right. If death only ended all, but it doesn't. The persons were right after all, there is hell, and we are in it, and there's nothing more to be said. Oh that I could die! I said, all the same, though they were right about there being such a place as hell, they were wrong in saying it was eternal, or, rather, hell itself may be eternal. But no one need remain in it eternally. I can prove it. Here am I in this division, but I've been far lower, I've been down to the very bottom of hell, and since then have been steadily rising. Are there other places than this in hell? I had no idea of it. Many other depths below, and also divisions above, I believe, through which we shall have to pass. She looked at me intently. Yes, I can see you are speaking the truth, but this is all quite new to me. Well, will you come? Yes, I will. If we fail, at any rate we shall have had some excitement. It will be a new sensation, and it's ages since I have had one. Chapter 28, A Newspaper in Hell. Racing. So we set out together, making our way cautiously through the city. Every now and then bands of revelers would burst out of houses and taverns. Sometimes they took no notice of us, at others they would call to us to join them. Once or twice they danced round us in a circle, and on one occasion four roisterers seized the woman who was with me and carried her off in spite of her resistance. I went after them, knocked down two, and thereupon the others dropped my companion, whose name, by the by, was Ada, and made off. In one place I noticed a band of burglars employed in breaking into a house, while on passing through the market, which was crowded, I saw a man busy making a speech. We stopped to listen, and found that he was trying to promote a company to build a railway from hell to heaven. Many of his hearers were scornfully declaring there was no such place as heaven, but others were easily gulled, and began to subscribe eagerly. We passed the offices of a paper. Oh yes, we have papers in hell, just as an edition was being sent out. Obtaining a copy, I found the chief items of interest were these: new play, great success of Mr. Resman's work, The Folly of Virtue, police court news, arrest of two missionaries as spies and disturbers of the peace, local scandal, financial news, new companies, racing news, all the starters, new arrivals in hell, full list, together with interviews with prominent visitors. The only item which filled me with surprise was the racing news. How do you manage for horses? I asked Ada. Oh, we imagine them. We each think of some famous racehorse we knew of on earth. Then we visualize it as racing along the course and winning. On the day of the race anyone enters any horse he likes and the names are announced. Then each backer imagines that his horse is going to win. The more people there are backing a horse and the stronger their wills, the more likely it is to win. The worst of it is the judge generally declares the horse he favors has won, even when it obviously had not. We see all the horses racing, and we see the one that has the strongest backing gradually pull ahead, but in spite of this the judge often declares that it has fouled another. I suppose that's often true? Oh, it usually is. You see some of the backers are sure to devise a cunning underhand trick in their minds whereby they can outdistance other horses. In short, every horse will have fouled somewhere. But there's always a fearful row after a race, usually culminating in a free fight. We now had left the city behind, and Ada began to be very frightened. This loneliness is terrible. She whispered, it is awful. Let us go back. Nonsense, I replied, we haven't dragged so far to chuck up the sponge now. Come along. Look, there is the light. The faint star of light from the rest house seemed to revive her spirits. What a lovely star. I've never seen a star since I died, she murmured in an awestruck voice. How beautiful they were. Yes, let us go nearer to it. So slowly we drew nearer and nearer, and as the light grew, it seemed to bring us strength. At length it began to burn, And again she hesitated. This is very painful, and it seems to grow worse as we approach. Do you call this pain? Nonsense. You should go through what I have suffered, and then you'd know what pain is. This light is merely cleansing us, burning a little of the dirt out of our spiritual bodies. My example and my strength of will help to keep her on the path, until at length we reach the door, and, on knocking, it opened to us. The light blinded us, but kind hands, which nevertheless seemed made of fire, helped us in. We were separated, and I found I was in a room which was much darker than the others. I was therefore able to see dimly, and perceived that the darkness was due to the fact that a window had been opened in the wall, and through it came in darkness in waves like the billows of the sea. Chapter 29, He meets his guardian angel at last. Then I heard a voice ringing through the darkness, clear and strong. There was a musical note in it which reminded me of a trumpet. It spoke thus, "Son, I rejoice that at length you are drawing nearer to me. For many years you have driven me from your side, but I have never forgotten you, and I have prayed without ceasing that you should be led to turn towards God. Still for a while you will be unable to see me, the brightness of my visage would be too terrible for you to gaze on in your present state. O, Great Spirit, is it for this reason that it takes so long to come into the presence of God? It is indeed. How could any man pass straight into the presence of God's brightness? But now let us start upon the journey. Follow my voice, and as you progress gradually I shall become visible to you as you are able to bear the light." Then one of the messengers entered the room and led me through the rooms of light out by another door from that by which I had entered. Then a great distance off I saw a tiny star-like light, and from it seemed to come a voice, "Follow me, and I will lead you forth." So I followed that light through the darkness, and every now and then my guardian spirit, as I afterwards learned to call him, spoke words of comfort and encouragement. Slowly and painfully I scaled the precipitous cliffs, often falling and stumbling, but still mounting higher. When I was about halfway up, the path ran along a narrow ledge, and on turning a corner of this I saw a great cave from whose mouth rushed out a band of spirits, but just as they seemed about to hurl me into the depths beneath, the star of light suddenly grew larger and brighter. It advanced towards me, and at once my assailants fled shrieking away. Once I was rescued, my guide returned to his original position, and I was glad, as the light had burned me, though to a less degree than it had my enemies. Presently I saw a great waterfall, which seemed to break right across my path. It was not beautiful as a waterfall is on earth, but seemed inky black, and the foam only appeared dirty and muddy instead of white. At first I despaired of being able to continue on this path, and sought out a track which would lead higher up the side of the cliff, but I could find none. On looking towards my guide I noticed he was standing close up against the edge of the waterfall, and as I watched he seemed to pass through it. On approaching nearer I found that the water fell clear of the ledge of rock in a kind of arch and went thundering down into the black chasm below. You may be surprised that there was any sound, since it was not material water. I cannot myself quite explain it, but I think seeing the waterfall I expected to hear the sound, and so imagined it. Anyway, the noise was like thunder as I approached it, and summoning up all my courage I crept along beneath the arch of water until I reached the other side. Now the path assumed more and more the shape of flights of steps, and in time it became obvious that these were not natural but built deliberately, and, moreover, that they were kept in constant repair. Till now I had hardly ventured to speak to my guide, but now I inquired, "Who is it who has built and kept in repair this path and stairway?" He replied, still from a distance, "Son, a band of noble spirits who keep a house of refuge whose beacon light is just becoming visible. They hold that house in relays, and while on duty there, one of their chief tasks is to keep guard over this path into the fourth realm of hell. Many of the spirits below band themselves together with the firm resolve to damage, and if possible destroy the various paths out of hell which the messengers have made. Are these spirits devils or men, and if the latter, why do they do it?" He answered, "Just men and women who, like many evil persons on earth, hate to see old companions leave them for the paths of rectitude. The beings you designate as devils are seldom found save in the lowest depth but one of hell. The voices personified are, however, found in each division to which they are appropriate. These upper realms of hell are almost entirely occupied by men. Where do suicides go? I inquired suddenly. Usually to the realms of hate, but occasionally it may be to the fourth division. Many, however, expiate their offense on the astral plane. Master. I began again, apostrophe. The light grows so bright that it begins to cast a faint beam across the path we are treading. Yes, my son, we are gradually approaching it, and, besides, those in the House of Refuge know that we are struggling towards them, and therefore are praying for help for us. As they do so, the light, which is in reality simply their faith, grows stronger, and as they pray about us and think of us it is directed towards us. Gradually the light grew stronger and began to dazzle my eyes, but much of the very worst part of my character must have been burnt away, for I did not suffer so keenly as when approaching the last house. Now we stood at the top of the stairs, I, close by the door which barred my way completely. My guide had passed through it without the slightest difficulty. Apparently in answer to the message he had taken with him into the house the door was opened, and kind hands led me into a covered courtyard, and thence into the house itself. The light of course blinded me now, but I learned by degrees that this house differed in several particulars from the first one I had entered. It was a good deal larger, and was built round a covered courtyard. Part of its duties was to guard the stairway to prevent it being damaged by the evil ones who dwell below, and also to see that no dwellers in the fifth division inadvertently wandered down into the fourth, for if they did so they could not easily return. It was also a place of refuge and refreshment both for the messengers and for those they rescued. Here let me add that those who grew too evil for the fifth division were hurled over the edge of the precipice by the populace which they had exasperated to fury. The fifth division is on the whole eminently respectable. It rather prides itself on it, though it is not so insistent on this fact as the sixth realm, which makes quite a fetish of it. Finally, this gatehouse also protected the head of a bridge, a covered bridge which stretched across an ink-black river, which here plunged over the cliff, and thus formed the great waterfall under which I had passed. The further end of this bridge was likewise held by the Brotherhood who were in charge of this house. I will stop here, and next time will tell you more about this river. Chapter 30, The Fifth Division. The Blatant Materialists. Churches in Hell, Trance Visit, July 6, 1914. On arriving at the place where H. J. L. lived I found the eyes awaiting with him, who at once took up his narrative. Led by my guide I crossed the bridge, which was entirely covered in, and therefore full of light, and entered the watch house on the further side of the river. Here we did not stay long, but passed out once more into the fog and gloom. For some time we walked along the bank of a broad and filthy stream which ran into the great river. With the stream on our right hand we journeyed till we reached a huge city. It was a most dismal place, great chimney stacks everywhere, and factories and warehouses on every side, and between them ran squalid, dirty streets. Filth and grime were everywhere. In and out of the factories moved streams of workmen, and I stopped to inquire what they were doing. One replied, "Working, what do you suppose?" "But what do you do with the goods?" "Sell them, of course, but the funny thing is that as soon as they are sold they return to the factory from which they came. That's why it is all the factories have so many huge warehouses. We are constantly building new ones to hold the goods. The whole place seems choked with them, can't get clear of the damned things. The factories are constantly getting jammed up with the things that return, and no matter how we try to get rid of them, they always come back." The officer. "Why don't you burn them?" The stranger. "Burn them? Why, we've burnt a dozen great warehouses at a time. But there they are again. Simply can't get rid of the beastly rubbish." The officer. "Why do you go on making the goods then?" The stranger. "We can't help it. We seem driven by some strange force, compelled to work and work without ceasing. There's no rest. A strange, mad instinct seems to drive us on. When I was on Earth I thought of nothing but my work. I worked hard, damned hard, day after day, and this is my reward. On and on and on, doing the same thing over and over again, without rest, forever and ever and ever. I can't make it out. The officer. I suppose you thought of nothing but your material interests when on earth, and so in hell you still go on in the same way. The stranger. Hell. There's no such place, or heaven either. The officer. Where are you, then? The stranger. I don't know, and don't care. Why, look what a number of churches and parsons there are here. But I've no time to stop talking to fools like you. I must get back to my work. And he entered the factory. I went on till I came to a large square, in which were no less than three churches. One belonged to the Church of England, another to the Roman Catholics, and a third to one of the nonconformist bodies. I went into the Anglican church, and I found a service in full swing. The parswain was preaching rather a dry sermon. He harped on two themes by turn: one, that people had no business to go to either of the other two churches, and should show more deference to himself as the representative of the national church; two, that they should subscribe more generously to the church and, incidentally, to its vicar. And he glossed these two themes over by platitudes about social reform and helping the material well-being of their fellow creatures, especially those whom he designated as the lower classes. Somehow, this part of his theme rang very hollow. I noticed the congregation paid little heed to the sermon. Some were whispering scandal to their next-door neighbors, others, mostly women, were criticizing the clothing of their neighbors. Several men were talking business, and in one corner two men were arguing violently, so much so that they interrupted the preacher, who glared at them angrily. I went out and visited the other two churches, and found a similar performance in each. We then went on and came to the shopping area. Here we found a similar state of affairs to that in the factories. People came to buy, but the money they gave for the goods returned to them, while the goods returned to the shops almost at once. I asked one shopkeeper where he got the things he tried to sell since the factories could not supply him. He, oh, they came here with me. They are the things which were in my shop when I died. Here they stick till I'm sick and tired of seeing them. The officer, why don't you give up keeping a shop? He, what a ridiculous idea. What on earth should I do without my shop? Why, my whole life has been centered in selling things ever since I was a boy. He turned away in disgust, and began to serve a lady who wanted to buy a new hat, which returned to the shop a few minutes after she had taken it out. Then I went to the council chamber, and found a crowd of men wrangling about improving the town. But after listening for a long time, I came to the conclusion that, though they might talk forever, nothing would ever be done. I passed out of the town and came to open fields. I use the word to describe the place, but it looked more like a piece of waste ground covered with rubbish, and entirely bare of grass. Here there was a stand, and around the field was a dense crowd of people watching what appeared to be a football match, but though the players seemed to try and play, no goals were scored, and nothing really happened. While I was watching, one man walked off in disgust, and was promptly hooted by the crowd. He turned round savagely, and, after using a string of words which I will not repeat, said, "What's the use of playing here? One never scores a goal, and one does not even enjoy running after the ball as one used to do. I'm fed up with the whole thing." As he strode away, I saw a bright stranger come up to him, and knew that soon another soul would escape from hell. Chapter 31, The Sleepers. We journeyed for some time till we came to a cave, and here I found quite a number of men fast asleep. Strive as I would, I could not wake them. This surprised me, for till then I had never seen anyone asleep in these realms. Having no bodies, we do not require sleep. I questioned my guardian angel, who now had drawn much nearer to me. He looked very sad as he replied, "Son, these were men who stoutly maintained that after death there was no life. They were strong-willed men who, had they believed, might have done much good, as it is they led many astray, and since they held this view so strongly they have, as it were, self-hypnotized themselves into a state of coma, from which it is very hard to rouse them. Here they lie, age after age, and while men whom the world considered far worse than they, and who had sunk far lower in hell, have been able to see the error of their ways and progress, they remain unconscious, and cannot learn. The officer, "This is truly terrible. Is there no way of waking them?" My guide, "After long ages the spell grows weak, then there come to them great messengers of light, who, after much striving, do succeed in breaking through their sleep and rousing them. At length we reached a place of deep chasms and beetling crags, and after wandering along at the base of a range of these cliffs we came in sight of a narrow, slippery stairway. As we did so, suddenly a figure came hurtling through the air and fell to the ground in front of us. It sprang to its feet and fled away into the darkness, and was soon lost to sight among the crags and chasms. Who was that?" I inquired of my guide. "Some unfortunate creature who has offended against the traditions of the 6th Division. They pride themselves on their respectability there, and those who offend too deeply are hurled forth by the outraged inhabitants. Self-righteousness is the besetting sin there. They love to judge their neighbor and to spread scandal. But look, there is the light of the rest house, and soon you will be able to judge for yourself what manner of men dwell in the 6th division of hell." How painful was the climb up that long, long flight of steps. But ever the beacon light grew stronger, till soon it illumined a path. Though the light hurt, yet I bore it stoically, and soon we entered the haven of refuge. Here I must stop, for it is time for you, J.W., to return. So having said goodbye to both, I, J.W., returned to Earth. Chapter 32, The 6th Division, A Church and Its Vicar. Letter from the Officer, September 5, 1914. We stayed but a short time in this rest house, which was a large one, before continuing our journey. Once more the fog engulfed us, and we seemed to turn to the right, and soon I saw the grey mass of a city. This city had a high wall on the side overlooking the great precipice, and it was from one of the towers of the wall that the man we saw fall into the 5th division of hell had been cast. The town consisted for the most part of modern-looking houses of the dreary, respectable type that one sees in many of the London suburbs. Some attempt was evidently made to keep the place moderately clean, and this was the first division in which this had been attempted. Seeing a theatre, and asking my guide if I might enter it, he permitted me to do so, himself waiting outside. As I entered I saw one of the inhabitants of the city and spoke to him. He seemed slightly taken aback, and said, "We've not been introduced." "Oh, damn it, what does that matter?" I replied. "Please do not swear," he answered. I apologized, and then asked him what sort of plays were shown in this city. "All sorts, so long as they are not improper. We will not permit any suggestion of impropriety here. Nothing vulgar or immoral is permitted. All our plays and music halls are conducted on the best principles." That's the first time since I've been in hell that I've heard people object to impropriety. He looked pained. "I wish you would not use that word. There is no such place as hell, and certainly we are not in it." "Oh, don't talk nonsense," I began. "All this realm is hell, so what's the use, or pretending it isn't? I've been long enough in hell to know that." "Stranger," he replied, "who are you, and from where do you come?" So I told him briefly my history. As I went on he slowly drew away from me, and at length broke in with, "That's enough, thank you. Either you are a liar or a villain. I know perfectly well I'm not in hell. I suppose I'm still on earth, but anyway I never have associated with scoundrels, and I am not going to begin now. Good day, and let me give you a piece of advice, which I do out of the kindness of my heart. I always was a kind-hearted man. Don't tell that story to anyone else here, or they will have you thrown over the battlements," and he made off. I went into the theater. A musical comedy was being performed. A poorer show I've hardly ever seen. The music was not absolutely discordant, as it is in the other divisions of hell. But it was feeble stuff. The very worst kind of so-called popular music. Plot there was none, and the whole show was so banal and trashy, that I cleared out at the end of the first scene. I noticed that the audience seemed as bored as I was, but nevertheless they stayed on. Next I tried a music hall which advertised outside that its show was a most refined entertainment. Funny without being vulgar, it certainly wasn't funny, and it certainly was, to my thinking, intensely vulgar, not indecent, but just vulgar.